Okay. So, okay, well, let's start with the demographic questions then. So, where were you born?
I was born in England, in Manchester, in 1949.
Wow. And where do you live now?
Now I live in Honeymoon Bay on Vancouver Island.
And how long have you lived here?
Since 1997. No, 2007. God, I can't remember the decades, right? 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 7 years.
And so how old are you now?
I'm 65.
And you were mentioning you just retired, but you're still somewhat employed.
Yes, I'm a physiotherapist, part-time now.
And that was while you were in the paid labor force, that was your main career.
Yep, that's what I've been doing since I graduated in whatever year that was, 1970.
Well, do you think that, you know, our generation were kind of instrumental in redefining what female means?
I think we were. I think we were part of that, yeah. Yeah. I hope so. Otherwise, I feel like my life has been wasted. So I have to believe that.
Right. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was just becoming an adult, I don't think women could even get a credit card.
Not without, if they were married, they had to have their husband's permission.
And I think you had to have some kind
of... We accepted that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't, but people did. Our mothers did.
But banks? Yeah. But, I mean, the whole society was just set up in that way in some ways. And
no, I think the world has changed. Well, the Western world has changed a lot for women, and I think we were part of it.
Yeah.
I think the Western world's changed a lot for lesbians, and I think we were part of that. But I also put a lot of that on the shoulders of gay men, too.
Mm-hmm. And how was it being a lesbian there and compared to being a lesbian in Toronto?
Okay, in my most activist years in rural communities, I think it was very much a matter of finding community with straight women.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, you know, doing women's centers and stuff like in 100 Mile. And I think my connections with lesbians were mostly social rather than political. Though, I mean, I did do the other women, the Open Door, which was a newspaper for rural lesbians in BC, and I did that for about 8 years or something, yeah. So, I mean, made a lot of sort of connections around the province that way. But very different, I found a very different experience than doing sort of political work in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the cities, it doesn't matter whatever goofy faction you're part of, and we were part of some of the goofiest, I think, that, well, you know, you find kindred spirits, and there are lots of, you know, that doesn't happen if you're sort of, you know, the only out lesbian in a small town. You know, you're not going to find a whole group of people who are not only just lesbians, but lesbians of a certain political bent and a certain faction of that political bent and everything else, right? So I think it makes forces you to be more broad-minded, to find alliances in a way bigger range.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And then the last... You know, my last few years in Burns Lake and my years down here, I really haven't been that politically active. I mean, I've been out as a lesbian, and that's always a big shocker in small towns even now. Though they just started, one of my music students has just started a gay and lesbian support group in the high school.
Wow.
And so thrilled. So I said, any support you need? I'm just staying out of it, especially since I'm her teacher and she's in my choir and all that stuff. So, I mean, it is even, you know, it's still happening. Sometimes you feel like you're just inventing the wheel over and over again, doesn't it? Anyway, yeah. So what I was saying is I really haven't been that politically active. I'm much more active in nowadays in sort of arts stuff, you know, trying to set up an arts center in Lake Cowichan and doing the choir and doing my studio and doing the theater and all that sort of stuff. So it's a little bit, you know, I mean, one of the nice things about theater is that, you know, even the most right-wing, you know, the most remote theater group, that's the place where you're going to find the gays, right? Yeah. So they're all there, you know. And that's sort of still in small towns, that's where especially gay men gravitate to the arts in a big way.
Right.
You know, it's still, and it's sort of more acceptable there than in the logging camps, say.
I guess so.
For example. Yeah. A lot of homophobia still. In the couch, and it was a couple of years ago, suicide, a kid in the high school being bullied for being gay. You know, I mean, that's only a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder what we've been doing for 40 years, but there you go. Anyway,
and
you
so,
gotta stop them.
Okay, and so the,
edit.
So your sexual identity, you identify as a lesbian, do you use, is that your main identification, or do you use dyke, or... queer or gay or
I guess it depends where I try. I guess I tend to use lesbian the most. In some situations I'll use gay, particularly if it's a situation where I want people to see me as part of a bigger gay movement, you know.
Right.
You know, if I feel the need of some sort of legitimacy beyond being a lesbian in really threatening situations, you know, like if I'm talking to the minister of Baptist church or something, I might use gay.
Right.
You know, and believe me, I do talk to people like that, you know, so you kind of have to. I don't use queer much. No. I use queer with the young folk, because they do, you know.
And the yeah. young people around here, they more use queer?
Well, that's what I say. I don't hardly know any. This is the first time I even, you know, I'm really hoping that this little gay and lesbian support group gets some support, and, you know. Now I'm trying to think. There's a young guy in the high school here. He uses gay. He says he's gay. So, but then I get that from his mom. You know, like this is the grown-ups telling each other that he's out as a gay boy. I don't know what he actually says himself.
Yeah. Or maybe it's different when he goes online and when he's talking to his friends in high school.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm so far removed now from that generation. You know, I mean, I hang out with their grandmothers. You know, so I get their grandmothers' versions of their lives.
Right.
So
yeah.
What do you know? You know.
And how would you describe your socioeconomic class?
I think I've been middle class work, you know. I've worked all my life, but I work at a professional job with a good income. I don't have any money now because I didn't save any of it, so now I'm poor and elderly, but it's fixed income. I'm low income. Now I'm qualifying for all the low income stuff, right? I'm just getting the deals on my insurance and my income tax and everything. Soon, I have to wait a year before I get a deal on Medicare. That pisses me off. Yeah.
Wow.
Because they.
And when you were diagnosed with cancer, did you have extended health care?
Yes.
And how about your family doctor? Did you have, or what was important to you when you chose a family doctor?
You mean when I had cancer, or just generally?
Well. Just generally, and then when
because
when
it's
had
different.
Cancer. Okay.
Just generally, I want a doctor who like knows all the ins and outs of the system, and will do what I ask her to do, and usually her.
Her.
I usually tend to try and get a female doctor. Yeah.
And why would you prefer a female doctor?
Oh, I don't know, because I'm of that generation when it was actually unusual for women to go to medical school and you wanted to encourage it, you know? So that's just stayed with me. You know, just like I still don't, you know, buy Kraft Foods. When did that boycott end? You know, I don't know. No one told me to stop, so I stopped. Kept on.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of these habitual things, when you do it for a few months and then, you know, the years go by. And
Though, but I mean, when I went through my cancer year, I did that with a male doctor.
And was that a specialist that you went to?
No, that was like a family doctor. I changed. Oh. I had a female family doctor who gave me the diagnosis. And, well, I'll have to tell you the story. So I went in and she told me, she sort of said, you know, we got this mammogram. It looks really serious and stuff. And I looked at the report and I knew right away from the report that, you know, I've got breast cancer. So she's telling me all the ins and outs and what we're going to do next and the biopsy and stuff. And I'm leaving her office. And this is the one little doctor's office in Barnslake where I live and work, right? And I mean, I just found out 10 minutes ago I had breast cancer. So I wasn't really ready to tell the world yet, you know. And as I'm going out of the office, I sort of said, okay, well, I'll talk to you, whatever, thanks. And she said, oh, don't thank me, Judith, for telling you you have breast cancer. Aww. Yeah, I thought, Denise Bojai, I said, you bitch. I just felt suddenly very exposed and stuff.
Right.
And so I went with my girlfriend the next week. And this was very daring because there's only one clinic with, you know, doctors in. And said I wanted a different doctor. So ended up with a South African guy. They're all South African, of course, because that's who works up north. And he sort of said he didn't know anything about breast cancer, and he certainly knew nothing about the system of breast cancer in BC or Canada, and but he was willing to learn if I was willing to learn with him. And I said, that's the doctor I want.